Welcome to episode 2 of Affinity Finance Podcast. I'm Lauren Ashen, Client Relationship Manager, and I'm going to discuss actual and constructive knowledge plus breach of duty on Japanese knotweed claims with Tom Carter from Ropewalk Chambers. Welcome back, Tom.
Hi, Lauren. Nice to be here.
Today, we're going to be talking about actual and constructive knowledge. When we talk about knowledge, what is that knowledge of?
There are two things, really, for knotweed. The first is knowing that Japanese knotweed is a dangerous plant. By dangerous, don't necessarily mean might physically harm anybody or even potentially physically damage buildings, although that's still a controversial issue. But knowing that knotweed is an invasive plant that may cause problems, either potentially property damage or causing a diminution in value. So knowing about knotweed in principle, and then the second is knowing that there is knotweed in a particular location. Depending on who the defendant is, the second may or may not be an issue. If the defendant is just, say, a homeowner, owns one property, they've got knotweed in their garden, and they're not doing anything about it, and it's spreading to next door neighbours, then the second issue is probably not going to be a relevant one because they should know what's in their garden. The issue is going to be whether they appreciate that Japanese knotweed is a problem. If the defendant is, say, Network Rail or a local council or the Environment Agency, anybody with large amounts of land, the second point might be relevant because even if, let's say, Network Rail knows by now that Japanese knotweed is a dangerous plant, doesn't automatically follow that they'll know there's knotweed in a particular location, which is then really when you get into arguments about inspection regimes, how often should be inspected. But in a nutshell, those are the two things that we mean when we talk about having actual or constructive knowledge of Japanese knotweed.
So what is the difference between actual and constructive knowledge?
Actual knowledge is knowing, actually knowing about knotweed. That's, for example, where a claimant has themselves or somebody else reported Japanese knotweed to a defendant, and from that point on, the defendant actually knows about it. Or if it's a large defendant with multiple employees, there might be a record of an employee of the defendant recording Japanese knotweed, perhaps on an inspection of, say, a park, if it's a local authority that's the defendant. Constructive knowledge is saying a defendant should have known about it. So it's really not allowing a defendant to be either willfully or at least wrongfully blind to the fact there is knotweed. And that is saying, well, even if you didn't actually know about it, you should have known about it. A reasonable defendant in your position would have known about it. And in that case, a defendant is fixed with knowledge from that point on. And in practical terms, it makes no difference. So a defendant who is fixed with constructive knowledge is under exactly the same duties as a defendant with actual knowledge from the same date.
Okay, brilliant. So how can you prove actual knowledge? Is there a specific way or things that we should be looking out for?
In some cases, it can be quite easy. In the ideal case, you might have a claimant who themselves says, I've reported it. I either telephoned and have an email confirming, or I've got a reference number, or even I complained by email or letter on this date. Here's a copy of it. If that can be evidenced, then that puts the defendant on actual knowledge from that date. It may not be the claimant themselves. It may be a friend, family member. Often it's a neighbour. You might have a row of houses, again, using Network Rail as an example. You can imagine railway line stretching behind potentially hundreds of houses. And you may find that if the claimant at number 30 didn't report it, you might find their neighbours at 28 or 26 may have done. Again, it may be a case of having a written record of that complaint in terms of the complaint itself or an acknowledgement, or it may be having evidence from the claimant or the neighbour, friend, family, whoever it may be, saying I reported it on this date. If you have that, then it's usually good to try and test the evidence early, because if a defendant disputes having been told and you have a claimant or a neighbour who says, no, I definitely reported it, then to resolve that dispute, you have to think about how strong your evidence is going to be if you got all the way to a trial. Usually the way to test that, in my experience, is to ask the client or the neighbour just really some questions about when they reported, how they reported. And you will tend to find if they're likely to be a good witness, even if they don't have a written record, and even if they don't know the exact day and time, that usually they will be able to say to you, well, I know it was in April because, I don't know, it was my daughter's birthday in that month and I remember it was around this particular time, or at least it was definitely before, let's say, August, September of 2012. Something like that to give you something specific that tends to suggest that they do genuinely remember and they're able to say with some detail. At the other end of the scale, you do have sometimes neighbours, clients who say, well, I've been reporting it for years. And when you say to them, well, when did you first report it? How often then did you continue to report it? What kind of time of year was it? What year was it? Often you may find that they struggle really to remember the year, even within a few years. They may struggle to say, well, I can't even pin it down between 2010 and 2015. If that's the case, you may have to be a bit more skeptical about whether you would actually prove that they reported it if the defendant is maintaining that it was never reported. So test the evidence, but really that is how you prove it. You either have documentary evidence to show an acknowledgement or the complaint itself, or you have the direct witness evidence from your client or from the neighbour. But as I say, if that's what you have, should test it early rather than assuming it would be accepted, because that's sometimes a way to get a nasty surprise later on if a defendant denies being told.
Okay, so it's really important that we have that strong evidence at the start then.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do you establish constructive knowledge?
The argument really is, what would a reasonable person, when would they have known? In the Williams and Network Rail case, the decision the judge took at trial, and this then wasn't challenged in the Court of Appeal, was that 2012/2013 was the date of constructive knowledge. A lot happened in 2012 and 2013. The first edition of the Environment Agency's Code of Practice on Japanese Knotweed was published in 2006. There was then a second edition, but then the third edition was published in 2012. At the same time, the RICS Institute of Chartered Surveyors published their guidance on Japanese knotweed in 2012. And the PCA, the Property Care Association, which was a body of experts effectively put together by different mortgage lenders who were increasingly concerned about knotweed, they also published guidance at that time. And in Williams, the trial judge took the view that really 2012 was the time when the world at large began to wake up more to the problems of knotweed. The reason for the 2012/13 was to allow a little bit of leeway for defendants to actually absorb that information and think about what they were going to do. And because the defendant in that case was Network Rail, the second of the two issues I mentioned earlier was relevant, about not just knowing knotweed is a problem, but knowing it was in a particular location. So the 2012-13 was allowing up to a year or so for the defendant to actually inspect and identify it to deal with that second point. That's been followed in all of the cases that I've run to trial since, and I've never really seen anything to suggest a judge might stray away from that. The decision in Williams isn't binding because it wasn't one of the issues on appeal in the Court of Appeal. But my experience has been judges will follow that. I think firstly, because it is a fairly well thought out decision. The judge took painstaking care to set out in great detail the history of knotweed, the mechanics of it, the history of the various publications and information. So I think judges will effectively not want to do all of that legwork themselves if already somebody has done that in great detail. And the second reason I think they tend to follow it is it does seem like a fairly fair approach to say, well, there was obviously a point in time when the world at large became more aware of it. So it's difficult to see why a judge would particularly want to go against that. For that reason, usually with constructive knowledge, the starting point is going to be 2012-2013. And in terms of what you need to show that, it normally does just fall into place on its own, unless you're getting into arguments about trying to push for an earlier date, which may be important on the facts of a particular case.
So in your experience then, have you seen arguments for earlier date of constructive knowledge?
There are arguments. Of the cases I've run to trial, and always found judges have said 2012-13, but there are arguments. Firstly, an argument to go back in time to say, well, the first Environment Agency Code of Practice was published in 2006. If you have a defendant who's, say, just a homeowner, unlikely you'd ever succeed on that. With a larger defendant like Network Rail or a local authority, it can be argued they must have known about it. Often Network Rail was actually a sponsor of the Code of Practice, so it's difficult to see why they weren't aware of it at the time. You might fall into traps on the second point about knowing it's in an individual location. Some judges might be slower to say, well, they should have had a system of inspection in place that early and leave that for later. But that's an argument you can run. There may be other arguments. Often that does come down more to the evidence. There is a concept for constructive knowledge of what's called specialist knowledge, which is where an individual defendant actually knew more than the average person in the street, and they're held to that higher standard. So if you do find in disclosure, and this can be difficult sometimes in pre-action disclosure because that may be limited in scope, but often when pleading a claim, I will usually put a caveat in there that may be arguing for an earlier date subject to what disclosure may come forwards. But there is disclosure to show that a particular defendant had some specialist knowledge. They had employees who had specialist training, or they had some involvement in something or other that may suggest they actually knew much more than anybody else. Then in that situation, you may well be able to push for an earlier date of constructive knowledge, but it's usually going to depend on the evidence.
Okay, and you've touched there on the defendant and when they have knowledge. So when a defendant has knowledge, when will they be in breach of duty?
The question really, once a defendant has knowledge, is they have a duty of care, they have to act reasonably. And that can often be a how long is a piece of string question, because it's all sorts of arguments about what isn't reasonable. My experience would be that at the minimum, a defendant has to put in place a treatment plan that's properly managed and that provides for knotweed to be treated over multiple years. Knotweed can be a hard plant to eradicate. It can often be quite straightforward to treat in that it is just applying, spraying herbicide, but that has to be done over multiple years. It has to be done consistently. That is to say, it's no good spraying one half and leaving another half, because that other half will just continue to grow and spread back over the parts which were already treated. So it has to be sprayed consistently and for multiple years. And again, if a year is missed somewhere in the middle, or if it's done for 1 or 2 years and then stopped, then it's all for nothing. So at a minimum, a defendant would normally be expected to put in place a treatment plan. They may be able to do that themselves. My experience has often been local authorities want to do it themselves, and often they don't do a particularly good job. So they will say, well, we have groundskeeping staff who are perfectly well qualified to do this. I've seen all sorts of cases for claimants and defendants where they've been purporting to treat it for years. Actually, they haven't managed to treat it, and it seems as if they've not treated it properly. In which case, the argument would be that they ought to employ a third-party contractor. There's a whole industry of specialists who will treat Japanese knotweed and manage it. Usually then they would be expected to do that. And if you have, say, a homeowner or a larger defendant without any trained staff, would normally expect them to do that straight away without any interim period of arguing that their own staff should do it. So the minimum is treatment with a plan, and that's carried out properly so that it's actually done reasonably.
Okay, so you've said that it's a defendant's obviously responsibility for the treatment. How do you know if a defendant's treatment has been reasonable? Is there a way to measure that?
Sometimes, to give an extreme example, if a defendant says they've been treating, and they may be able to show they've been treating with records stretching back 10 years or more, but the knotweed is still there and maybe 60, 70, 80% of what it was originally, that tends to suggest, just on a common sense approach, that they've not been treating it properly. Because knotweed is an invasive plant, it does cause problems, but it's not magic. And ultimately, if it's treated with herbicide, it will die. It is as simple as that. So if knotweed is still there in large amounts after many years, that would firstly suggest something is not being done properly. Otherwise, it would be eradicated. That's an extreme example. In a less extreme example, usually an expert would be needed to deal with this question. You may have a defendant saying they've been treating, but an expert will be able to look at it and to identify whether the treatment has been applied consistently or often what happens. Again, network rail is an example, and this was very much the case in the Williams case, was defendant purporting to treat, sending its own staff with sprayers, spraying glyphosate herbicide at the right times of year, but there were huge patches which were missed because they were spraying haphazardly, they weren't being meticulous, and they were missing patches. How an expert would often determine that is if they go during the growing season, they would look at the knotweed and they could normally tell whether there is what they tend to call bonsai growth. If you spray knotweed with herbicide in 1 year, it will not completely be eradicated the following year, but normally it will grow in bonsai growth, which means in a smaller fashion. Usually the stems will be twisted and it's obvious the plant has been damaged by herbicide. Usually what an expert will look for is, are there patches without bonsai growth which suggests the defendant actually hasn't been spraying methodically and has been missing patches? Or in the extreme example I mentioned earlier, if it's been treated for many years and simply isn't going anywhere or has only been reduced by a very small amount, an expert may be able to then work backwards from that to say, well, I think this is what's been going wrong because of X, Y, or Z. So really, it's a question of expert evidence.
I know we're coming towards the end of this podcast, Tom, but I just have one more question for you. What if the defendant was in breach of duty, but now has started properly treating the knotweed?
That can be a difficult one. You have two kinds of cases there, really. And the best case is where defendant still isn't treating, even though they've known about it. That's a stronger case. Doesn't mean that you don't have a case, but it can be more tricky in that situation. What you may end up with is an argument that defendant is now treating properly, but should have started treating properly sooner. And then it's a case of identifying how many years late the defendant started. So let's say there's no actual knowledge, there's constructive knowledge, and a judge found constructive knowledge from 2012 and defendant started treating in 2018. Well, from 2012 to 2018, there's a 6-year gap. So the argument would have to be in that case that the claimant is still suffering from the diminution in value of the knotweed and the inconvenience involved for 6 years longer than they should have done. And I know that we're going to talk about diminution in value more in a later podcast, so I'll try not to go into it in too much detail. But in a nutshell, the argument would be that there is diminution for a longer period of time. And often an expert would say, well, there might be a sliding scale. If this is your diminution now, it will slowly decrease by 10% per year over 10 years back to nothing. But in that case, you would be looking to argue the sliding scale, which I know we'll come back to. But what I would say in terms of that question on reasonable treatment is, if you don't have a high value property, so if the claimant's house is worth less than, say, 200,000, then you may want to be careful about this, because if you end up on that sliding scale approach, then you may find that even if the diminution in value was over the £10,000 small claims threshold to begin with, by the time you're arguing the sliding scale approach, it may be down to, let's say, £5,000, which, depending on the cost of treatment and any other damages, you may be looking at less than £10,000. So that's something to look out for. But that's something that I know, Lauren, we'll go back through when we get to diminution in value on a later podcast.
Brilliant. Thank you, Tom. And you're right, that's the next podcast that we'll be discussing. Thank you ever so much again for joining me on today's podcast. It's been another really useful insight into these Japanese knotweed claims. Join us next time when we'll be discussing damages to treatment and diminution in value. Thanks again, Tom. And thanks for listening, everybody.